La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou, 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 font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.
Bonjour rugby friends and welcome to a new edition of the French Rugby Connections podcast with moi, your host, Véronique Lindu and
Bill Hooper.
Bill, how are you?
Very well in sunny Cornwall, thank you, Véronique.
Ah, the same weather in sunny Surrey. Yeah, and last week it was absolutely boiling in Toulouse, not only in Toulouse, but also in Bordeaux. But let's talk about that phenomenal game between Toulouse against Exeter. It was a first try for Toulouse.
Well, it certainly was a tremendous game, and it was hot both on and off the field, wasn't it? But it was actually quite even until about the 55-minute mark. There wasn't a great deal in it, but then Toulouse just went into overdrive and just pulled away and ended up scoring 9 tries to comprehensively book their place in the semi-finals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are right. I mean, the first half, you know, your neighbours, your Cornish neighbours, is Exeter, I beg your pardon. Exeter is in Devon, not in Cornwall. Your Devonians, neighbors, you know, they did fight hard. They gave everything they got in their belly because the score halftime was 16-17, I think. It was very, very tight. There was only 1 point difference, 17-16, yes.
Very tight, as you said. And I mean, fair play to Exeter. You know, they've changed the squad radically this season, brought in a lot of young players, and they certainly are learning the ropes this season. And, you know, as I said, you know, for an hour they went toe-to-toe with Toulouse. But in the end, the greater firepower and strength of Toulouse really saw them home. And in the end, it was quite a comprehensive victory.
Yeah, Toulouse really, really woke up, you know, after halftime. They went on the offensive and they scored 4 tries in 11 minutes. Can you imagine? You know, what a first try. What a try first, sorry.
It really was. I mean, they really, as I said, put the afterburners on. I thought Jack Willis had another tremendous game for Toulouse, didn't he? He was everywhere. And Santa Costa as well was extremely, extremely good in midfield. And of course, the duo of Entomac and Dupont was—they just such a well-oiled machine, and some fantastic play from both of them.
Absolutely, and the final score was 64-26. You know, the scores have been so high throughout this European Cup. They are very much following, you know, an attacking strategy during that tournament.
Well, yes, it certainly is. It really does sort of, how do I say, typical, I mean, for Toulouse, I mean, obviously the jeu toulousain has always been an attacking style of play and it suits them well. So, but it's great to see all sides, all the sides that won scoring over 40 points. So that just goes to show you, you know, the attack mindedness that there is, and sets up some fascinating semi-final fixtures.
Indeed. And also, let's not forget the game between Bordeaux Bègles against Harlequin. Wow, speechless.
Yeah, it was toe-to-toe, wasn't it, all the way through. And obviously, very disappointing for Bordeaux Bègles to lose by just a single point, 41-42. And of course, right at the end there, poor old Maxime Lucu had a conversion to win the game. And sadly for him and Bordeaux, it went past the upright.
It was such a stroke of bad luck. Incredible, incredible. Yeah, it would have been so nice for Bordeaux Bègles playing the semi-final. But we have to be honest, and, you know, Harlequin were out of this world. You know, they were absolutely amazing throughout. So I don't know what they had in the coffee, how many espresso they had or something else, but I've never seen them playing that well before because, a few weeks before they got completely trashed by Saracens during the showdown in London.
Yeah, I think it comes down to your mental preparedness. And I think, Harlequins obviously went down there. They probably felt they had nothing to lose. Give it a good go, and they did just that. They played the game that comes to their natural instincts, and there we are. They got the win. They played some great rugby, as you said. Fantastic rugby. I hope they took back a few crates of good wine to celebrate on the way home.
Yeah, quel dommage for Bordeaux. And my favorite was there, Mathieu Jalibert, not playing, but being the water boy to help out his teammates because the temperature was scorching, was 29 degrees. Imagine playing rugby for 80 minutes under that sort of temperature. That's atrocious.
Very hard, very hard indeed. So, well done both sides, but it's Harlequins who go through to play Toulouse on the, I think it's the 5th of May in the Stadium in Toulouse.
Yes. But again, a reason why maybe Bordeaux didn't play as well as they could have, they missed the X factor via Penaud. Damien Penaud was injured, unfortunately. And Mathieu Jalibert is still suffering from his knee injury as well. So who knows, maybe the score would have been different. But anyway, it was a great achievement for Bordeaux-Bègles because that was the first time they reached the quarterfinal in this competition. So still well done to Bordeaux-Bègles. And they've got one objective like La Rochelle, who was playing in Dublin last week as well. And the miracle didn't happen. They beat previously twice Leinster, and yes, this time round Leinster had the upper hand and won that game.
Yeah, it was a little bit one-way traffic, wasn't it? Leinster were just too good on the day, and La Rochelle just couldn't live with them. Obviously, very disappointing for La Rochelle. I mean, obviously, having won back-to-back Champions Cups in the previous 2 years, they're not going to be able to make it three in a row. So perhaps now they'll also be concentrating on the top 14 and hopefully winning a first ever Bouclier de Brennus.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the objectives now to focus on the top 14. And today they are going to play against Castres. So it'd be another away game because La Rochelle, my goodness, they've been traveling a lot. They have accumulated air miles. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, they were in South Africa. Then they played in Ireland, and this week they are playing against Castres. Their renewed objective is to win the Bouclier de Brennus.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you've got to say that. I'm sure Ronan O'Gara will be looking to get La Rochelle back on track there, and the same at Bordeaux-Bègles. They're going to refocus their objectives now. Hopefully get some players back and kick on and try and make sure they get the qualification places for the playoffs in the top 14.
And Ronan O'Gara said during the press conference that he really wanted to make a statement with the game against Castres. So Castrois or Castres, I'm not too sure what you call a person who lives in Castres. Beware, there's going to be blood. So let's focus our attention to the top 14. I've never ever seen the top 14 that close. The score that separates all the teams are minuscule.
It's very, very tight, really, in the top six, isn't it? As I said, you can go all the way down to Bordeaux. Bordeaux on 49 points. Stade Français on 63. It's a good spread, but you know, it's very, very tight, especially at the top. Stade Français, 3 points ahead of Toulouse. And then there's a bit of a gap to Racing, Toulon, La Rochelle and Bordeaux, but they're all just covered by 3 points. So it really is very, very tight for those playoff places. And today will obviously be an indicator as to who wants to be in the final six.
Yes, and for example, you know, Bordeaux-Bègles is currently ranked sixth with 49 points, and Lyon is ranked 12. There are only 7 points difference between the sixth place and the 12th place. So it's really, really, really tight. Anything could happen, you know, depending on the score. So it's becoming mathematical now. We might have a few surprises, actually, you know, happening within the next weekends.
Yeah, it's obviously we're getting down to the nitty-gritty part of the season now, aren't we? And it's not just battling for the top six places for the playoffs, but it's down the bottom as well, scrambling to try and make sure they keep their heads above water and don't get pulled into the playoff place, which is currently occupied by Montpellier. I think we can safely assume that Oyonnax are going to be relegated. I think that's a definite now. But it's the playoff place, the 13th place in the table. That's the interesting thing down there at the bottom. Who'll be left in the 13th and have to play off against the team that comes through the barrage from Pro D2.
Yes, I mean, in terms of ranking, like you alluded earlier, Stade Français is currently number one in the top 14 with 63 points. But let's not forget, you know, they had no internationals, you know, playing during the Six Nations. So they were less hurt by the lack of their senior players. Toulouse, 60 points. Then number three, we got Racing 92 with 52 points, Toulon 51, La Rochelle 51, Bordeaux-Bègles 49, Pau 46, and then Castres, Perpignan, Bayonne, Lyon and Clermont. The bottom two at 13 is Montpellier and Oyonnax. So place 12 is between Clermont and Montpellier.
Clermont have got to travel to Bordeaux-Bègles on Sunday. That's going to be a big game. Again, a big game for both clubs because they both need points. Montpellier, Pau, again, same scenario. Both clubs need the points. And Lyon, they're at Perpignan. Wow, that's a battle down the bottom, isn't it? Perpignan, also they're scrabbling away to keep ahead of the playoff place with Lyon. So it's going to be no quarter ask in that game, is it?
Correct. So the big game this weekend is the derby between Toulon and Toulouse. Well, not quite a derby, because the derby is very much Toulouse-Castres, if I'm correct. But Toulouse-Toulon is always a big, big game. And this time, it's going to take place in the Vélodrome de Marseille.
Yes, moving it to the Vélodrome. Hopefully, they managed to get it sorted out after the Marseille's win against Benfica in midweek in the Europa League. So, yes, a big game for both clubs. I'm sure it's going to be a packed-out Vélodrome. It'll be interesting to see what the team selection for Toulouse is in this game. I think Hugo Mora has indicated that he's going to rest some of his players after the battles in the Champions Cup. So it could well be a very much remixed Toulouse side that travels to take on Toulon.
Yes, all key players that played last week against Exeter have been rested for this game. So that means there will be some players who are not used to watch it. We play.
Yeah, but they've got a big squad. But as you say, it'll be interesting to see how they get on. And I think Toulon are going to be pretty much at full strength. So it should be a cracking game. I'm sure it'll be red hot in Marseille for the match.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And Toulon is currently ranked number four, Toulouse number two. So yes, but Toulouse has 60 points, Toulon only 51 points. So I think Toulouse is pretty safe anyway.
So there is a good margin there, but even so, you can't afford to take the foot off the gas even at this stage of the season. But yes, I mean, Toulouse will want to finish in the top two and avoid having to get involved in the playoffs between fourth, third, and sixth. Avoid that extra game.
Yes. So for Toulouse, the team has been announced. So we'll have Ramos, Delibes, Kitoun, Chocobarès, Tosin, Tosin, Germain, Graou, Brennan. Interesting to see him, Brennan. Obviously, he's the son of the famous Irish rugby player who owns a eatery somewhere in Toulouse, in which very well-known eatery. In which players like visiting Castro Ferreira, Flamand, Fazatélé, Vergé, Henou, Marchand, and the captain will be Nettie. Sitting on the bench, we'll have Cramon, Bertrand, Méafou, Rouma, Willis. So Willis will still be playing on the bench. Rottière, Cos, and Merclaire.
Yeah, I mean, even so, it's still a pretty good side, isn't it? That's the great strength at Toulouse. They've got a lot of strength in depth, which is fantastic.
And from the Poulon side, the Italian Paolo Calabresi, who used to play for Montpellier, is going to play for Toulon. And that would be his first game next to Baptiste Serin.
That's going to be interesting to see how that combination works out, isn't it?
Yeah, very meaty game. I think that's very much the highlight of the weekend. So, can you tell us which games are being played this weekend?
Okay, I think we've alluded and touched upon some of them. There's Castres against La Rochelle, Pau against Montpellier, and Perpignan at home to Lyon. Stade Francais playing Bayonne, Oyonnax at home to Racing, Bordeaux Bègles at home to Clermont, and then Toulon against Toulouse. So that's the programme for this weekend.
Excellent. In the meantime, the Pro D2 finally, yes, Van is heading the Pro D2 after their victory against Béziers.
No, Montauban.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Montauban. It was a test, really. I was testing you.
What was the score?
You tell me.
36-26.
Very nice, very nice. Looking in very, very good shape. So yeah, I mean the top 14 on the Pro D2 comprise in total I think 30 teams. So French rugby is extremely healthy, and Pro D2 is such an exciting competition as well to watch. But always better to be at the top. I think it's about time for Van to rise and to join the top 14. It would be lovely, lovely to see them playing next year. But one game at a time. They've been in that situation before in 2021, if my memory is good. So yeah, they need to keep a cool head and see what they can achieve.
Yeah, they've only got a 1 point advantage over Aix-en-Provence. I think those two are now pulling away now from Béziers, who are a third. So yeah, I think that top spot for the automatic promotion, it's going to be either Vannes or Aix-en-Provence who will clinch that spot.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a frog in my throat. So I've got some news for you. This week, I had the pleasure of having a former World Cup winner and MBE, Kieran Bracken, speaking at one of my events that I've organized with my company. So I was absolutely delighted, you know, to meet in person, you know, Kieran Bracken, as you know, and I had a few of his teammates on the podcast in season one and season two. You know, I had the pleasure to speak with Ian Balshaw, Dan Luger, one of my favorite ever. He was so nice, the man of Monaco, and Ben Cohen as well. So amazing to see him. And he was so humble and so funny. He spoke beautifully of his experience, you know, working, playing, you know, for the World Cup, and how strategically astute Sir Clive Woodward was in terms of revolutionizing, you know, the way the England team was being managed. I then realized that before Clive Woodward went on board, the budget for the RFU was only 3 million, which was nothing. Sir Clive Woodward managed to increase to 12 million. Before that, they used to travel coach. So imagine the guys that were 6'5". They had to sit in economy, or they went to Argentina, and because money was tight, they used to take two different flights. So Sir Clive crew decided to treat them like a rock star and made sure that they would always travel, you know, in business class or first class. They would stay at 5-star places, and he was the one who set up the RFU center, you know, in Penny Hill Park. So absolutely amazing, but you know, they had to deliver. And before, when they reached, you know, the stage of the World Cup, they were all statistically, they were 10% fitter than the rest of the team, and they had that belief they would win, even, you know, if they won in the extra time, the last minute against Australia. But wow, that was absolutely amazing. So I would highly recommend for any of my friends, if you've got any company events, you know, please think about Kieran Bracken. It was a delight. And he really, really motivated my company's sales team. So that was the highlight of my week.
Oh, well, fantastic. And really great to get the insights of Kieran as to what went on behind the scenes there and the build up to the 2003 Rugby World Cup and how things changed under Clive Woodward. Yeah, things did need changing at the RFU. Unfortunately, it's still a similar story now. That things still need to be changed at the RFU, but that's a subject for another day.
That's a different matter. I think it's more the politics of the RFU, but I think the players, you know, are being very well looked after. And it was a case of before Sir Clive Woodward, you know, took the reign of, well, it wasn't a sir at that stage, before Clive Woodward took the reins of the England team, you know, for instance, your girlfriends and wives, they were excluded, yeah, you know, from the whole setup during game days. But Clive Woodward was saying, hey, when you have a bad day, you know, who's there to support you? It's your wife and your girlfriend, you know. When everything goes well, it's fine, you know, as you're part of the boy, but you know, it's a tough game to be an elite sportsman, and you go through a period of peak and trough and anxiety and depression. And yes, so absolutely amazing speech, you know. So, and he was very, very funny as well, because he made some of my colleagues, you know, try some of his kits, very, very, very tight kits that Clive Woodward asked Nike, you know, to design, so that when they played, you know, nobody could grab their shirt. Before that, you know, in the time when they were amateur, players could grab their collar, their baggy top. When it was raining, suddenly their top would weigh 5 kilo instead of 1 kilo with the new kit. So absolutely amazing. I think Clive Woodward reminded me a little bit of Arsene Wenger. When Arsene Wenger came over, you know, to the UK, he completely revolutionized, used statistic, and that's why, you know, Arsenal was absolutely amazing under the reign of Arsene Wenger as well. So his new work.
He had a unique style of management, Arsene. So did a lot of good when it came to England, and certainly with Arsenal.
Yeah, but this is a rugby podcast, so back to rugby. So, another exciting top 14 weekend. I'm sorry, I tend to repeat myself, you know, every... In the last few weeks, I've been saying, oh, it's very, very tight, but it is actually. I'm not lying. It's never been so tight. As I was saying, the difference between the place of Bordeaux Bleg, which is ranked 6, and Lyon, which is ranked 12, is only 7 points. And we still have like 5 weekends to go. So,
yeah, no, anything can change, and it probably will. So it's going to be very, very exciting. But before we go, we must touch upon the women. France women had a good win last weekend against Italy, 38-15. So that's their third win on the trot. So it keeps them in the hunt, chasing England at the top of the table with more maximum points. And this weekend, France are playing Wales in Cardiff. So they need to get a good win there to keep in touch with England before the final showdown next weekend in Bordeaux.
How could I forget my compatriots playing in the Six Nations for Women? I do apologize. Thank you very much for reminding me. And if you can watch, you must watch, you know, the women playing rugby. I mean, at that level, you know, they take no prisoners. It hurts better than me, that's for sure. But as I was saying to Kieran Bracken, because I'm short, I'm bossy, and I can read the games, you know, I would have been the perfect scrum half, but nothing else than that. When you used to play rugby, what did you play as?
Oh, I played in the pack. I started off at number 8 and ended up as a prop.
Okay. So you moved up or you moved down, depending on as the level of fitness, I suppose. And
I had an awesome turn of speed from 5 yards out.
Oh well, and that's why I love rugby. You know, you can be short, you can be tall, you can be fat. There will be a position for you. It's very, very inclusive. It was one of the beauty and. It's water on the pitch, but after the game, it's being part of a big rugby family, and you forget everything. The supporters as well can sit next to each other, and they can drink alcohol, and there are no fights. I've never seen any fights in my time being at rugby stadium.
No, I've not. There's never been anything too. Well, it's got a bit close at times, but nothing untoward. Normally, somebody, a former forward is always there to sort of quieten people down as they're getting a bit over boisterous. So,
from the Supersoul side, obviously there are a few songs, a few mentioned when Saracen was relegated because of the salary cap. Yes, I remember there were some songs, there were some mention. I think the social media sometimes can be kind of a nasty place. It's kind of passive aggressive, but it can hurt, you know, players and so on. So, yeah, people, I know people can be very passionate about their team, but there's no need for hate on and being malicious on social media.
We saw that at the Rugby World Cup with some silly posts and ridiculous comments made about referees and so forth. So yeah, there's no place for that sort of thing at all.
But, you know, let's finish on a high and another wonderful weekend. We'll start very shortly and we'll be back next week. Au revoir.
Yeah. Au revoir. À bientôt.
La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou, 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 font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.